Hello, my friends, and welcome back to the Trusted Bread Podcast, where meaningful conversations and stories are told. I'm your host, Lisa Helton, and before we start, please make sure to subscribe to the Trusted Friend Podcast on your favorite platform so you never miss an episode. Your support means the world and helps these stories reach a wider audience. I truly believe all the stories shared on this podcast will help others. Even if we can't relate to every story, there's nuggets of insight and helpful moments we can learn from each of them. Today's story is that of bullying. I know that I have gone through years of bullying in elementary and in high school, and it was definitely character building. I appreciate Carrie sharing her story. Carrie shares her childhood experience and emotionally takes us back to how she felt, the effect that it had on her, and what it took to believe she is of value, she's not alone, and trying to break those triggers that bring all those feelings back. All of us can learn something from Carrie's story, whether we are currently being bullied as adults, which does happen, or if we have kids and teens, we can share this episode with them to maybe start a conversation to help them navigate their school years. We know that bullying happens everywhere, and a lot of bullies get away with it because of influence, power, and privilege, and I think that really needs to stop. And my purpose for reaching out to anyone that's willing to share their bullying stories is because of a bullying situation that I heard of a few months ago. And it really aggravated me that the victim was more shamed and the bully got away with it because of her privilege and status. And I think that should never happen. And so now let's hear from Carrie. We can take many lessons from her story and journey. I'm your host, Lisa Helton, and you're listening to Breaking the Chains of Bullying with Carrie Jokala.
My name is Carrie Jokala. I am a Reiki master teacher. I am the host of the Energy Within podcast. I am a mom, two little boys. I'm a wife. I'm a bazillion other things, but my main focus is using energy work, mindset work, meditation, oracle cards, things like that as tools to help women with their confidence.
That's awesome. We all could use some confidence. Sometimes I have too much. Sometimes I have too little. I need to get it so it's just right. Can you start off by sharing a bit about your childhood and early experiences that shaped who you are today? Because it obviously did lead you to wanting to empower and give women confidence because of the experiences that you had as a child. Mm-hmm. Can you explain more about that?
Yes. I have yet to decide in my story if I describe what happened to me as full-on bullying or what I should call it, because I wasn't physically hurt or anything like that. And I know that comes a lot of times in people's bullying stories. And I was even thinking just today, I'm like, sometimes I get almost my own confidence goes a little lower in that point because I'm like, does my story even count if I wasn't like pushed and shoved and stuff like that? But it was emotional and mental, and it really had a long-term hold and effect on me because of it. So it absolutely counts.
Absolutely. 100%, because those mental things can have long-lasting effect. And even though that's tied into emotional when you're getting bullied physically, the psychological kind of warfare on the playground, so to speak, is 100%. And it stays embedded in our brains for a very long time and how we see ourselves.
Exactly. I spent the vast majority of my childhood basically by myself, being left alone, intentionally excluded, made fun of quite often. And there's random instances across the years, but just that feeling of not being wanted, that feeling of being pushed out. And it's different when you think, maybe I wonder if they're talking about me, or you wonder, you know, if people actually want you around. It's different when you actually have the confirmation in your face every time. But yeah, they're definitely looking at me and pointing and laughing and whatever they just said, even though I couldn't hear it, maybe. Now they're laughing. They're still looking at me. So yeah, they're laughing at me. And not being invited to birthday parties, people not coming to my birthday parties, being told that I can't be part of a group in class, like when we have to form groups, nobody letting me in there. There was one specific story, I think maybe like fourth or fifth grade. And right at the beginning of the school year, we had gone over to the music room, and the music teacher had us split into groups that we were going to be in, not every time in class, but multiple times over the whole course of the school year. So this is going to be like a set thing. This is going to be our groups that we chose. And I don't remember exactly what we were doing, but there were probably little projects and challenges and whatever, and then we could get points. I remember there was a board where stickers were to chart our progress. And then there'd be like a winner at the end. And me already knowing that I was the outcast, anytime there was one or two other girls who were also outcast, we defaulted into being friends. Got along just fine, nothing against them whatsoever. It's just that in any other situation, just personality-wise, we probably wouldn't have become friends. It was just because of the situation kind of thing.
I'm sure you're all aware that you're the outcast and that you're forced to be together. That makes it a little bit different than a choice.
Yeah. And it's funny, there was even stuff even among all the groups, it just goes levels deeper and deeper. But in this particular class, there was one of those girls who I knew I could typically count on her, that she and I would buddy up for whatever. And I remember her telling me that she wanted to be by herself for this particular thing. I don't remember if she actually did stay by herself or if she ended up joining a group, but nonetheless, it left me by myself. Walking around the room to all the different groups of girls, I skipped the boys because I already knew they wouldn't want me. I laughed to get through it, but I remember going around to all the different groups of girls, and every single one was like, sorry, our group is closed. Sorry, we're not letting anybody else into our group. Sorry, we're not open anymore, blah, blah, blah. Every single one. I went back to my chair because the teacher hadn't called everybody back together yet, so everybody was so split off. Went back to my chair completely by myself, bawled my eyes out as silently as I could, but I'm sitting there crying some big, heavy tears. Nobody came up to ask if I was okay. Nobody changed their mind as a result. Nobody reached out to me, not even the teacher. I don't know if she noticed or not, so I don't know if it was just that she didn't see or if she just chose not to bother intervening. Even then, it's not that I needed someone to step in or even the teacher to step in and be like, hey, you must take her into your group, because that really wouldn't have made me feel better either. But it was just that knowing that I was that alone. Luckily, home was a safe place for me where I knew that I was loved. But when you're spending the majority of your days in school with these same kids from kindergarten all the way through eighth grade, and then some of them follow you to the same high school, it gets a little lonely. It really starts to get you and it messes with your head. It messes with your confidence and it turns you into a different person. I found myself going from, it didn't really take away my love of being in the spotlight. I've always been a bit of a performer and an entertainer at the same time, because that's just somehow for some reason ingrained in me. But it did, in just everyday situations, cause me to try to make myself invisible. Because if you can't see me, you can't make fun of me. Yeah, that's just one instance, but it encompasses a lot of what I ended up going through and how I felt.
How long did that last? When did you come to your own or find your own little group of friends?
High school got a little bit better, but I was still struggling with a lot of my emotions. The summer between eighth grade and going into high school, I started off really excited because I'm like, I got a clean slate. And yeah, some of these other kids are coming, but we're going from a class of 60 kids to there's going to be like over 300. Like, I think we had 360 something kids in each class in this high school.
Wow.
Like, yeah.
Large.
It was big.
That's like a university. That's crazy. Poor
teacher. So like, I'm going to have a chance to get to some of these kids and show them who I am. And maybe they'll want to be my friend before these other kids can get to them and be like, hey, did you know this about Carrie and making up stupid stories about me or twisting things or whatever. And something hit me in that summer about how truly alone I was, and that I really didn't know who to be, how to act, who I really was going into high school. And it hit me like a ton of bricks, the realization of how alone I was. Like, I still had some hope that I was clinging to and motivation from my parents that, like, this isn't going to be forever. You're going to find people who are going to like you. This is, kids are mean, blah, blah, blah. I hung on to that hope. It got me through knowing that I was a good person, that I was a nice person, that I was smart, and whatever it was, like, it hit me. And then there were other things that, as you're trying to figure out who you are when you're in your preteen, early teen years, and you start thinking about everything, and you start thinking about life and your purpose. And I almost couldn't see a purpose at that point. And I became pretty depressed. I didn't ever receive like an official diagnosis of depression. Mm-hmm. But as far as I'm concerned, I was depressed because I no longer found joy in everything. I was only okay if I was asleep. And as soon as I woke up, it was that cycle of feelings all over again. not really wanting to die, but not really wanting to carry on either. Like that weird kind of in between. There's also a part of me that like, there's this little flame of hope that I can never completely put out. It can dim, but I've never been able to completely extinguish it. So even in those really dark moments, dark few years, I still had the hope that I can get through this. I want to get through this. I want to turn this around. But I didn't really know how. And I reached a point where I asked my mom if she could find a psychiatrist for me. And that did not go well. I realized that even something like watching movies that could have a little bit of a dramatic tint to it or listening to sad songs was not helpful for me. It would spiral me down lower. It would really bring up all those feelings. It would make me start to overthink things again and get me in that sad space of emotion. Anybody remembers this movie, but it was the movie Jack with Robin Williams. And it was a movie where he had some disease where he aged rapidly. So while he's still in grade school, he looks like an adult. And they made jokes around it, him going in to buy alcohol because he looked like he was 20 years older than he actually was. Keep thinking about it. He's an old man, technically, physically speaking. Correlates with his own lifespan too. It's not just what he looks like by that point. That really got to me in the state that I was already in when we watched that movie. So that made more thoughts start popping up into my head, more worries start popping up into my head when I'm already worried about life and death and purpose and all of this.
How did it affect you?
It just really make it, because I was in that space where I didn't really know if there was a point to life. But I also was afraid of death at the same time, even though it's fiction, obviously. Right. Just like watching this character go through, I'm an empath too. So like I over empathize with even fictional things, you know, internalizing all of that. Oh my God, this guy's not even going to make it the normal length of a lifespan. And it just got my thoughts spiraling again. Even if I was at neutral, it could bring me like all the way down here again. And it would be really hard to crawl my way back out of that. So when I went to see the psychiatrist, his question to start everything off, where do you think this started? I was going to use this whole thing from the movie Jack to explain what I was feeling and where my thoughts were going and how that was not a cause, but a little bit of a trigger for me spiraling even further. I got out in the movie Jack, he laughed out loud and then said, "You can't get depressed from a movie." So I shut up again. I politely answered the rest of his questions and nodded my head when it seemed appropriate. And that was it. I didn't really know what to say to my mom or how to bring up that this guy was rude, because I also didn't really speak up for myself in any capacity in those years of my life. So there were a couple other sessions. I don't know the reason specifically why it didn't continue, but they served no purpose for me. So I was okay with them going away. But that really stung too, that realization that, okay, here's someone whose job is to help me get out of this. And even he's laughing at me.
You're just wanting to be heard and listened to and validated. Yeah. And he just dismissed any thoughts.
Yeah. And as silly as some of my worries may have sounded, like the thing is, like even you look at a little toddler with these big emotions and something completely inconsequential happens that causes this big meltdown.
Yeah.
It seems silly to us because we can understand how it's not going to affect anything else, how everything's going to be okay. But in that moment, to them, that's all there is. That's what's important right then. And I think we've probably all heard that our brains aren't fully developed until we're probably about 25. So here I am at 13 years old. My brain's still developing. I'm in that really awkward phase, and I'm already awkward to begin with.
Just what I've learned about trauma is that when certain things trigger us, it's not, oh, that's bringing up a memory and you're logically thinking through it. It pulls you back and you're right there.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right there in your classroom with nobody wanting you to join the group. All of those same exact emotions come flooding up when things trigger you. So it's not like you're logically thinking, oh, this is a movie or this psychiatrist is saying something to me and it's affecting me. No, it's taking you right back to the exact feelings. And that's why our bodies physically react to certain things that trigger us because of the effects of trauma.
Yeah, it's exactly true. Every time I tell that story about music class, I can feel the same way. Even though I know I'm a different person now, I know I've worked through all of that. I know that I don't have instances like that in my life. And if anything does show up, I know how to work myself through it now. But retelling the story, getting back into that memory, just like you said, it brings everything flooding back. And yeah, so that was just, that was hard. And that was my first unofficial realization that I was going to have to be the one to save myself, essentially. As much as anybody else who was close to me, any family members or whoever would have wanted to help me, there wasn't really anything anybody else could, and in the case of the psychiatrist, were even really willing to do. So if I wanted to get out of this, I was going to have to do it myself. I went completely to the opposite, not extreme exactly, but I tried to force myself to be more outgoing in high school. I don't know if obnoxious is the right word, because I didn't go like overboard. I wasn't like misbehaving or anything, but I tried to make myself seen a little bit, like to go from hiding and being invisible to trying to allow myself to be seen. And I did find a pretty good group of core friends that a lot of us stuck together throughout high school. And that was very helpful. But like I said, I was still dealing with figuring out who I was and trying to work my way through this depression without really telling anybody. I didn't want anybody to know. And avoidance was my first way of getting through all of that. Like I was saying before, avoiding watching any movies that could potentially make me sad or listening to any sad songs. Like if I would buy a CD because, you know, whoever I heard on the radio, I liked their songs and I wanted to have them, I would try to listen to the whole CD, but if any song sounded like it was going to be sad, I would skip it. I didn't set on a lot of good music. So in fact, years later, okay, I think I can listen to this. And I'm like, oh, actually a really good song. But that was my first way, maybe not the best way to do it, but that was my way of getting through and trying to focus on happiness and joy and really intentionally trying to cultivate more of that in my life, just avoiding whatever I could if I suspected in the least that it could put me back in that state, because I really wanted so badly not to be there anymore.
You already at a young age knew what to avoid or what was triggering you and how to avoid it. Because a lot of people at the young ages don't comprehend, and there's sometimes no fight to get out of it. You'll intentionally listen to the sad songs or watch the sad movie because you want to almost feel valid in your feelings of being alone. So the fact that you did the opposite is quite remarkable.
Looking back, I am pretty proud of myself for having that intuition, I guess you could call it.
It's good that you had a strong family. I think that probably helped a lot. I think if you didn't have that and you had it at both ends, at home and at school,
right?
A lot of kids do. That's why they end up being bullies. It's good that you had the family, that you had the support. That's probably what propelled you a little bit to that direction.
Yeah, I think so. And I credit my parents for always having a pretty laid back outlook on life. Even if things get stressful, everything always works itself out in the end. That was the motto that I heard a lot over and over. And
that's good.
Not to worry, because it won't always be like that sort of thing. So I went to that opposite extreme, still found myself being made fun of, still feeling left out in ways, because if you look at it from the sense of gratitude, you can sometimes not really fully see or appreciate what's around you and what you do have. So I finally had these friends and we would hang out and they were calling me. So, hey, do you want to go do this or go do that? I had never had that before. So that was amazing. Everybody wants to be one of the popular kids or in this group or that group. And I found myself being rejected still and being made fun of by those people that I really would have liked to have been friends with. Looking back now, I realized they weren't my people. It wouldn't have worked anyway. But as a kid, that's what seems like the best and most fun option to have that kind of notoriety.
There's some people that have just peaked in high school.
It's all those bullies. That was it. That was their claim to fame.
Right, that was high their school. Time.
Yeah. And now it's over. So hope you had fun. I think that's
so true. If only
we
could get people in high school to understand that.
Oh, I know. And that is such a short
beyond.
Yeah. It's such a short time of your life. And you're like, really? Why did I worry about it in high school? But it's also a very mentally and emotionally forming time of your life. And imprints on you who you're going to become. Right.
And I did have an instance a friend told me about where these kids from grade school were still trying to poke fun at me and trying to spread stupid stories about me. For example, so I went to Catholic school pretty much my whole life. I think even technically my college was Franciscan, but I think that still falls under Catholicism somehow. But yeah, so Catholic school my whole life. When I was in grade school, a lot of times I would find myself alone during recess. Loved indoor recess. I loved when it rained because that meant I could just sit at my desk and read a book or something. And I didn't have to worry about being out in the open or having to try to find something to do. We had outdoor recess. I was typically walking the perimeter by myself just as a way to pass time until the bell rang. And that was it. I wasn't talking to myself. I wasn't talking to anybody else. Maybe I would stop and talk to one of the chaperones that were there on the playground once in a while. But that was pretty much it. If I wasn't playing something with those other girls, but like I said, there's fear, internal drama within that group. One of the kids, no clue how this would have come up in a religion class, but my friend told me that this one guy tried to claim in front of the whole class that I used to walk the playground in grade school, talking to myself and preaching about Jesus. No. Thankfully, the teacher in that class already knew me. And apparently his response was he just moved on. But it was like knowing that was like, why? Why? I don't think I even really had any classes with this kid. Maybe one or two throughout the course of high school. Like, why are you still thinking about me and trying to spread stupid false rumors about me? Not even an interesting rumor. Harder.
Yeah, that's actually a good rumor.
Thank you very much. Went through that in high school and then moving into college, I guess you could call it balance, but it wasn't like the balance where like I found myself and I settled in. Like I was still struggling with all of these emotions and really trying to figure out who I was and how to really be myself. My whole life had wanted to be a writer. So I went, my first major was writing. There was an actual writing major, not just an English major. So that's why I chose this particular college. And then I did enjoy acting. And I thought that would provide me some of that fame too. If I went to, maybe I'll go to Hollywood or New York and I'll try to be an actress. And then everybody will see me and everybody will love me because everybody loves celebrities. So I added the theater major. And you would think that would have helped to maybe draw a little bit more confidence out of me. It didn't help at all. I ended up in this weird middle ground from the making myself invisible and trying to allow myself to be seen. It was like this weird back and forth where I would try to still be outgoing without being obnoxious, without going overboard or being too loud, but then also really feeling those feelings again when I would feel left out. If I were to see me and have been interacting with me back then, I would have been really annoyed with myself because I was not behaving. I didn't quite realize it yet, but this is the time where I was probably really doing a good job of pushing people away because I was trying so hard to be included, to be liked, to be told. Like I wanted people to tell me how much they liked me. Like I wanted, it's just not because I necessarily wanted the ego boost, but I needed that confirmation. Like I needed the validation because otherwise I would be sitting there thinking they don't want me here. I'm like whatever they're planning right now amongst all of us while I'm sitting as part of this group. I'm probably not actually invited. They probably don't actually want me to come. So I should just assume that I'm not included in this conversation. I just happen to be sitting here, allowed to be here and allowed to listen, not being pushed out, but they're probably not actually including me. So it was a lot of my own mindsets in that time that was holding me back. And I know now that had I just let that all go, just been myself, just accepted that if I was there in this group with people who let me, maybe even invited me to be in this conversation or whatever was going on, to accept that meant that I was actually accepted. Let that be its own validation. But I didn't see it just yet. Even if I was getting that validation, even if I was receiving the compliments or the feedback of some sort that would let me know that I was wanted, that I was loved, that I was included, that I was accepted for who I was, I didn't actually accept it. It's weird. Like when you're in that state, you want that so badly that when you finally get it, particularly in my case, I think you push it away because, not to keep jumping too far back and forth, but one of the things that had also happened in grade school that I know led to that feeling for me was learning that compliments were usually backhanded ways to make fun of me.
Really?
Oh, yeah. There was one. It's, I guess I can't really term it as a compliment per se, but it was this kid out at, like, we were at, like, a school picnic or something, and we happened to be sitting near each other, and he was like, "Hey, Carrie, you want to go see a movie?" And at first, my heart was kind of like, but I'm like, I knew better by this point.
Yeah.
Because of all the times I had been made fun of, I wasn't going to let myself be set up. So I said no. I rejected it. And he, maybe, I don't know if he really thought it was making fun of me or if he was just trying to be funny, but his response was like, "Oh, man, I was, if you said yes, I was going to say, have fun." Okay, thanks. That's great. So at least, okay, I stopped myself from setting myself up for that. So that was good. So from that point on, and just having been made fun of all the time, I learned not to accept compliments, which led to not accepting the love or the reassurance or the validation that I was seeking, because my worry in the back of my mind that they either didn't mean it, they were just saying it to try to, yeah, or it was a trick.
Which is natural. It's totally normal.
Human
response to do things.
Well, then another instance of essentially an authority figure that punched me back down, like that psychiatrist did. You can't even get validation from the people who are supposed to be helping you there in school. So my theater professor, I don't think he remembers this because we're still friends on Facebook and he comments all the time, "What a beautiful family," when I pictures of my son, but he sends me the happy birthday messages and he's so nice. I'm like, I don't think you remember or understand how much you hurt me that I still remember this 20 years later. We were in acting class and we had groups that we were put into to do different scenes. My group got done doing our scene and there was one other girl who was very nice, so nothing against her whatsoever, but she had a very naturally high-pitched speaking voice. She was a singer. She was high soprano. So that just, I don't know if the speaking voice came first or if they influenced each other somehow. I'm a singer as well, but I'm more like mezzo soprano. My voice now, what you hear now, is the result of just not forcing my voice to lower, but really getting intentional with speaking from the diaphragm and all of that kind of stuff as I've gone through years of doing group exercise, being a wedding DJ, doing the podcast. I had a radio show in college. So like it's just a natural progression as my voice started to adjust to the way I was trying to speak for that. So I do give him that my voice at the time was a little higher pitched and I didn't really have control over projecting correctly and all of that, but he didn't have to say it like this. He praised this other girl for lowering the pitch of her voice, which I did not hear. It did not sound. Again, nothing against her. She's very nice. But I did not hear. In the next breath, he looks at me and he comments on my high-pitched voice and says, "If this were a real play and I realized that I was going to have to listen to your voice for more than 10 minutes, I'd walk out. I don't know how I held it together for the rest of class. But I held it together until I got far enough away where he couldn't see. And then I broke down and cried." That's not horrible. Really understanding. Now I know that, okay, there was some work I could do to lower my voice because I know my voice is a little bit different now as a result, like I was saying. But also at that time, I was still under 25. My brain's still developing.
We're self-conscious every time you speak.
And that's the thing. That's just my voice, dude. What am I supposed to do? I guess I don't talk? Like, what?
I know. That's horrible.
So, yeah.
Give me his Facebook. So, this is what the trusted friend really does. It seeks revenge. It seeks revenge on people.
Names for
people that share their stories, I get a list of names, and then it's called the Revenge Podcast.
That is hilarious. I love that.
It's awful. I'm sorry that he said that to you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And this stuff, all of these stories, this all sticks with you. Even as you work through, it's still there. It sticks with you. I don't believe it's ever going to fully go away because you don't forget. You still have the memories. It's a matter of retraining our brains, retraining our mindset, taking back our power, taking back our energy, and not letting other people shake that. And it takes a lot of work. It was a long process for me. My first real kind of light bulb moment that started me intentionally working on my confidence, they both came during dance class, actually. I was still in college, I think, for this first one. If you think of a three-way light bulb, this is like the first level of the light. So it didn't really change much for me yet, but it was just like this moment that got locked away in my brain. Oh, we should remember this. Outcast is not the right word in this situation, but I was a little different in the fact that I was 19, 20 years old when I started these dance classes. I didn't take any dance classes before that. I had seen this particular dance school perform over that previous summer. I took their contact information, so maybe that was my sign to contact them. So being 19 or 20, they offered me a couple options. They're like, you could go, we could put you in the adult class, but a lot of the adults in there would have been way older than me. Like I would have been the youngest by a lot. I didn't want to be the super youngest one in the group. I chose to go in the regular dance classes where I don't know what the oldest age would have been, but maybe like 15. That can feel like a big gap in that age range. When you're a little bit older, not so much, it doesn't matter. But when you're still kid, young adult, this. So I had to work through those feelings and make myself feel like it was okay for me to be there. I've always looked a little younger than I actually am. So I think visually I fit in that sense because I looked about the same age as the younger girl. And there was this one girl who was probably about 13. And she really took a liking to me. So her and I would talk a lot. And at one point told me, she asked her dad if maybe one day I could come over for a sleepover. And I'm like, oh, honey, thank you. But I'm 19. I don't know if that would. And she's like, oh. And I forget what she was saying after that. What I remember is, this is that quote that people won't remember what you said, but they'll remember how you made them feel. I remember how I was feeling during this conversation, where I see myself, like the way I had been acting, the way that I would talk, where I was seeking this validation, where I was pushing people away while I was in college. I started to see myself in her. And I noticed for the first time how that made me feel. And that was my first realization. This is how I'm making other people feel when I act like that. Oh my, what? It didn't really create a lot of change for me just yet. But like I said, it was a moment that I put away. We're going to remember this. There's something here. And then a few years later, I was sitting in like the lobby area of the dance studio. And two of the dance teachers were just talking over behind the desk, not a fully private conversation. Obviously, they're out in the open, but they were talking about somebody that they both knew. It was clear that they both love this person. They were talking about this person and how they so often tried to lift this person up, to let them know how much they were loved, how awesome they were, how talented they were, and they just would not receive the message. And it was getting for them frustrating to the point where they just almost didn't want to bother anymore, which was heartbreaking for them because they loved this person, but nothing they were saying or doing was getting through. So it was just getting exhausting for them and wearing on their energy. And that was my first real big light bulb moment because I saw myself now, because I had that other experience. I saw myself in their shoes and I saw myself in that person's shoes. I knew exactly what that person was feeling, why they were resisting the love and the validation that they were trying to give him. And it really made me start to be conscious of how I was acting because I really realized how I could have been pushing people away. It started me on first really catching my own thoughts. Like anytime I would have a negative thought come up of thinking like maybe this person doesn't actually like me, maybe they're just saying this and they don't actually mean it, maybe people don't actually want me here, or whatever thought like that that could bring up those old feelings from grade school and high school, any thoughts that could bring those up. On my own, I hadn't read any books or done anything else. It was just another kind of intuitive knowing. I started catching those thoughts. I didn't initially try to change them. I just tried to catch them and stop them so that that emotion couldn't fill into me, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And kind of the next big thing, which I only put together, I think when you and I talked way back, was receiving compliments. Like when I first met the man who is now my husband, and he knew nothing about me, obviously, other than the woman that he met at the time that we met. He knew nothing of my backstory, being made fun of or anything like that. So he just knew that he liked me and he thought I was pretty. And so he was complimenting me a lot. And I really did not want to mess this up. So I had to catch myself in those moments and train myself to just say thank you and actually receive the compliments and to know that there's no way, there's no reason there would be anything backhanded behind this compliment. So that was a growth moment for me too, in learning to accept that, learning to actually accept what I had been seeking. The rest of it came from starting to look into doing meditation, finally accepting that maybe it's not a bad idea to read a self-help book. Maybe it doesn't mean that there's something wrong with me. Because there was a long time where I think self-help was looked at, where, oh, you need that, do you? So now it's like, I didn't read those kinds of books. Like, you're doing something wrong.
don't look at my library then, because I've got like stacks and stacks of self-help books. They're the only books I actually read.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly. Now it's more common, but actually starting to read those kinds of books and look into those kinds of things really helped to start getting me to shift my mindsets. And like all those things that I was saying before, taking back my power, taking back my energy, understanding too that if I just calm down, let myself be myself, instead of letting moments pass me by, I would have so many instances where there'd be, you know, let's just say a conversation going on, and I would think of something that might be funny, but I wouldn't say it because I was afraid that what if it didn't land, and then now they're laughing at me instead of laughing with me at whatever I was gonna say. It took a long time to get over this hurdle of not missing the moment. Most often, I was just letting the moment pass by. It lived in my head, whatever I thought was funny. And then it's too late to bother saying it because now they're on to a different subject. It wouldn't even make sense anymore. Then it really would be stupid to say it.
Meanwhile, Carrie's laughing and they have no idea why.
No, they really think she's crazy. But then to really trying to, when I was getting more into consciously trying to work on my confidence, trying to close that gap a little bit. And the next thing was I would reach the point of actually thinking like, okay, I'm going to say it. Whereas I didn't really get to that point before, which was like, I'm definitely not going to say it, to a long period of time where the moment got as far as I'm going to say it. And then I still wouldn't say it. But at least I was getting closer to that edge. Finally, I don't remember what the first instance was, but I know there was a point where I finally was like, you know what? Just going to do it. Whatever pops into my head, I'm just going to say it. Within reason, of course. I started taking that step, and that was pretty scary, to put myself out there, to really let myself be goofy and weird. And sometimes it was well received, sometimes it wasn't. This is actually bringing up, now I'm going through, let's just talk about my life story. So
I'm all good. What it's supposed to be, like you're chatting with your best friend.
It led me to things like getting on the radio in college. It was a small college, small radio station. We were lucky to have internet access so we could reach beyond the little radius of the small campus. Doing that, getting into teaching group exercise classes where I had to be entertaining. I had to say whatever came into my head because I needed to keep people's attention. That really forced me to allow myself to be goofy and just whatever popped into my head was coming out. So that's when I started to learn that if I really truly was just myself and just let me be me, that I might actually find people who like me for me. And then I can just be me. And I know that they like me. And I'm going to find other people who are like me. I'm not the only weirdo out there.
Raise your hand if you're weird.
That's why I say embrace your weird. That's one of my mottos. Exactly. Embrace your weird. Do it.
Find your people.
So yeah, so I started to have that. And it was really making me realize that I had to save myself. I had to be the one to accept myself for who I was, to show myself the love that I had been seeking in order to get all of that love and validation that I was like, it's so bad. You have to do it first. So I have like my home gym that I've been at since 2010, teaching classes. I've done a few runs as a personal trainer a couple times there. But I had a real brief stint while still at this, my home gym, at another gym where I got my first little bit of experience as a one-on-one personal trainer. And I noticed there that kind of led me to really learning how not to take things personally, which was another big thing for me, learning how to really be solid in who I was, especially if I was around people who didn't get me. It's all authority figures for some reason. I'm just realizing this now. What's going on? The two main managers, so there's like the personal training manager and then the group X manager. And I got along just fine. There wasn't really an instance of necessarily bullying or anything like that there, but it was just like, I could tell they didn't get, like, I would make a joke that I thought was hilarious. Like, I was already at a point, like, you don't have to agree with me that what I said was hilarious, but you could at least acknowledge that I said something. This is like my first time since I really started embracing who I was, where I ran into people who really, truly did not get me. Maybe not making fun of me, but they just did not get me. It would be, I'd say something and it would be like cricket. And it wasn't even in a group of people. It was like one-on-one, me with this other person. Really awkward. You could at least say something. And I realized there that it doesn't bother me if you don't get me, but at least acknowledge so that I know when I can dial it up and when I should probably tone it back. Not change who I am, not be a different person, but just learning how to interact with other personalities at the same time. I think that's a very necessary and sometimes missing piece for a lot of people. We get into being comfortable with ourselves, being okay with who we are, but then we don't realize how our personalities might rub up against other people. And then we don't really understand how we can interact where we can still be ourselves, but we won't intentionally be causing any friction, if that makes sense. But
yeah, no, totally.
Yeah, so that for me was that realization of don't take things personally. And I've always described it as putting up like a shield versus a wall, where like sometimes you do need to defend yourself. Sometimes you do need to block whatever's coming in so that you can protect your energy so that it doesn't bring you down or whatever, or put you back into a certain space. Like, that's okay. But to know the difference between just putting up that shield for a second versus starting to build a wall and block yourself off again and change who you are as a result of the way someone else is acting.
That's a really good analogy though, too, because instead of starting to build that wall, just putting a temporary shield.
Yeah,
I like that. I like people that have your kind of energy, especially in that personal training arena. You need somebody to pep you up and get your energy going and not bring you down, but make you feel excited and energetic. And I think the right people, like, that is a contagious energy. And some people just don't know how to deal with it because it's too much for them, because they just, most of us, I think, are drawn to that happy, exciting energy, and it's contagious. I love that you just stay yourself, though, because I think it is so true. And so many people, we need to do it. Like you said, Carrie, if you are yourself, you will find people that like you for who you are. Mm-hmm. But if you keep changing yourself, you're never going to like yourself.
Yeah.
And you're never going to know who you are because you keep changing. Fairweather Lisa, just changing whatever somebody wants me to be, then I'm never going to like myself. I'm never even actually going to know who I am. Find the right people that you'll attract. Yeah.
It was that whole back and forth for me. And I don't think I was ever fully myself through the stage of trying to make myself invisible so that I couldn't be made fun of, to trying to make myself be seen. But then I really wasn't still being myself. Like, I was trying to be whoever I hoped people would like me as, if that kind of makes sense. So then
totally
not being sure, because that didn't really work either. So what if I keep a piece of that, but maybe it's more comfortable to be here in my invisible stage, because then at least I knew what to expect and how to react and how other people might react to me. It was like a weight off of my shoulders. It was just so refreshing to really realize that I was finally being myself by being this goofball, talking in movie quotes. Like, I will have whole conversations with certain friends in nothing but movie quotes. And obscure movie quotes, too. Like, you might have seen the movie I'm talking about, but nobody remembers this one quote. And that's the one that I say. storytelling and trying to make people smile, make people laugh, make people feel good, and in a way, give people what I didn't have, allow them to have this warm, welcoming atmosphere that they can be a part of and know that they're wanted, they're accepted. While I still maintain, we need to really be our own savior in that sense. We need to accept ourselves first. We need to love ourselves first. There's still plenty of call to go out there and offer that love and support and uplifting energy to the people who need it, who, like you said, so like I know that I was very lucky to have that spark of hope to help get me through what I needed to get through. And there are other people who just, not for lack of trying, but they don't have that same spark because their situation is completely different and it's hard to see a way out through it. Those are the people that we need to hold that light for and send out that energy for so that hopefully they can get to a place where they can start to receive it.
I think this kindness just goes a long way, just a smile or something, because we really don't know if it's like the breaking point for somebody and somebody extends that smile or that random act of kindness and it gives them that little bit of hope. I was going to ask you, given where you are now, are you glad that you went through all of that?
Oh, that's a good question. In a way, I think I am, because I know that I have a big purpose in this life. I always knew that I was meant to have some kind of a big impact, to hold a light in some way. And these were just the lessons that I had to go through, that I had to feel in order to really understand it, so that I could turn around and be one of the people who gets to help other people through that same thing. If things had been a little different, then who knows? I probably might not be in the same spot that I'm at now. Maybe I wouldn't have found the things that I do now, the Reiki and leading meditations and things like that to affect people on an energetic level. I tried for so long to find my purpose and figure out what am I supposed to be doing here? How am I supposed to be helping people?
You can tell that you've definitely found yourself and your energy, because there is an energy about you that you're just wanting to spread that spark and that energy to other people. That you're so excited that you found your answers, that you want to help other people find their answers so that they can feel as excited and at peace with who they are, like you found. Everything that you've gone through and everything all of us go through is only just to bring us more compassionate and understanding. But unless you've gone through it, right?
Yeah.
You really can't have the true sympathy and understanding. You can say you understand and you can understand parts of it, but if you've never experienced it,
yeah, we
can't offer that compassion.
And then this whole journey of finding Reiki and learning that was a huge hyper speed accelerator for my confidence journey in these last few years. And that led me down all these different rabbit holes and looking up all this different stuff and learning about the chakras. And then you get into star seeds and soul contracts. So the soul contract is a huge thing. I only have kind of my own understanding of it. I recently bought a book that I have not opened yet about soul contracts, but I have my own thoughts about what they could be and why they exist. But taking my life in that context, if you believe in that kind of thing, I may have signed the contract. This is what I was going to go through, and these were the people I was going to meet and the specific instances that were going to happen to me that would lead me to this point when I would finally have my awakening and reconnect with my intuition. That's a big thing. I know that's already come up a couple times, so that was a huge thing for me too, that I don't think I've given quite as much credit to in building my confidence, is reconnecting with and learning to trust my intuition, because it's really tied in with letting myself be myself, trusting the nudges, trusting the first thing that pops up into your head, because it feels like your imagination. And I've learned in these last few years through experience that your imagination is actually your intuition talking to you. It can run away. I will acknowledge that. It's not always working in your best interest, because our ego, our human mind can get in the way and start running off with things. But if we just let the message itself first hit us and we get the tingles or whatever our bodily cue is that something feels in alignment, or you ask a question and then an answer pops up in your head, or you see something over there and your first inkling is to go, huh? We've trained ourselves so much to write that all off and to ignore that, because we've been taught to seek answers outside of ourselves, to think logically through everything before we take any action. I'm a fan of logic. I'm not completely writing that off, but I think in the majority of cases when we're trying to figure out something to do with our life or our purpose or things along those lines, when we get those nudges, we need to train ourselves to start trusting them. And it's scary and it doesn't make any sense. And, you know, if we have a history of getting things wrong, that makes it even harder to trust. But I think more often we can look back and find examples in our lives where we should have trusted our intuition. Oh, I knew that the first thing I thought of was this and I didn't do it and I went with that. And then I found out I should have. I think we have more stories like that where we consider that a failure. We got it wrong. But it wasn't because we trusted our intuition. It was because we didn't trust our intuition. I don't know if that feels like a tangent or not, but I feel like that's all connected. And it's a very, for me, a very important piece of the puzzle that I want others to get back to.
I'm one that truly believes that. And I've even had, even from the smallest thing, I need to pick up bananas. So I'll pick up bananas and I get home and my daughter's like, did you pick up bananas? And I'm like, yeah, I did actually, because little things, but I've also had really big things happen too. Mm-hmm. We doubt ourselves because we don't understand it actually can be that simple.
Exactly. Yeah.
We're wanting it to be complex.
That's a huge thing. Yeah. We overcomplicate so much. Still working on that. But
no, that's one thing I truly believe in. And I've lived my life by that. And I always think too, especially if I get definite promptings to do something for somebody else or to call somebody or whatever and follow those. My theory is you could make a fool of yourself and you can be wrong. What if you're right and that person needs you or something happens or.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. There was recently, I guess you'd call her an internet friend, but she's been a guest on my podcast a few times. And we are very in alignment with each other and the way we look at life and the intuitive gifts and things that we do for our careers and all that. And she's been going through some hard times and really putting herself out there and sharing her story. And I had this nudge one day too. I've been following along on this new project, this new podcast that she was doing and listening into her telling her stories. And I really felt really proud to know her and to have her in my life in that limited capacity, even though we've never met in real life. And I had that thought. And then I had a nudge. Tell her that. Because I also think that's the thing. Putting that energy out there for people to give them that support.
Yep.
Like when you have those thoughts about people, tell them, because you don't know how much they might need to hear that. And I reached out to her and I just sent her a message. Hey, I know this is coming out of nowhere, but I just wanted to tell you how proud I am of you and how awesome I think it is that I get to know you and that we're friends, and this whole long message. And she messaged back about basically how much she needed to hear that in that moment. So trust those nudges and tell people the positive things. Tell people what you think of them.
I strongly believe in that. What's some advice you'd give to individuals who are currently being excluded or bullied, either as teenagers, as adults? Because I think it happens all the time.
I see so many adults who I know are still in that experience of emotions and feeling that same way that I used to feel when I was younger, knowing that doesn't go away just because you get older. That likely has been going on for a while. That's probably not new. As an adult, it all comes back from things that happened while we were growing up. To see people still struggle with that in adulthood makes me, I don't want to say more sad, because I get really sad for the kids. I just want people to know that it can be better. It doesn't have to be this way. I think my biggest piece of advice would probably be one of those first things that I sought out was seek out the things that make you happy. Seek out the things that bring you joy. Go ahead and immerse yourself in them. It's so hard to know who you are as a kid, especially. And you're not expected to know who you are when you're a kid. It's going to take some time because you need to go through lots of experiences and figure out not just who you are, but who you want to be and then how to be that person. But I think one of the things that can be really helpful is when you find that thing that brings you those peaceful feelings, that brings you happiness and joy, that in a way can become part of your identity. And that becomes a part of you that is unshakable, so that you know that you have at least something that you can go to help you feel like yourself. And you're in that phase where, like, it doesn't matter what anybody says because you love this so much and you love who you are as a result of this so much that it makes no difference what anybody says or does in response, because you're going to do it. And then as you go through the rest of your life, you can take those feelings and start learning how to draw that out into every other area of your life. That's the thing, because I think we can end up compartmentalizing a lot too. We're like, I'm this person and I'm really confident when I'm doing this. But then in this other area of my life or every other area of my life, I'm insecure and I don't have any self-esteem. If we can work on finding ways to transfer that same energy into everything else and understanding that at the end of the day, everything's all the same. Like, you look at life advice, you look at business advice, you look at relationship advice, the umbrella topics are all the same. So everything easily transfers from one area of life to another. So we open our eyes to that and realize that we can take that energy through every part of ourselves. That's going to help, but that's going to be a journey. So we start with seeking out that thing that makes you feel alive and makes you feel joyful, brings you peace. And then hopefully either finding it yourself or hopefully finding someone in your life who can bring it out in you, getting that spark, that flame of hope to draw you through and to trust that things can change and that it doesn't always have to be this way, that you actually have more control than you are remembering and allowing yourself to have. One of my favorite quotes since I was little, although I didn't really fully understand it in its full capacity until I was older, but it was, nobody can make you feel inferior without your consent. I believe it's Eleanor Roosevelt. That is so key, understanding whatever anybody else says or does. But looking at it that way, you have to give consent for someone else's words and energy to affect you. Like, that, you have to say yes for it to affect you. And if you can learn that you don't have to say yes when someone is rude to you, when someone tries to make fun of you, when someone tries to put you down, you can stand strong in your power, in your confidence, in who you are, and go on with your day, go on with your life. You do not give consent to let it hurt you, or at least not to let it stick with you, and definitely not to let it change you.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.
See you, Carrie.
Have a good night.
You too, bye.
Thank you, Carrie, for sharing your heartfelt journey with us. For more about Carrie or to thank her for sharing her story, please see the episode description for any links. If her story resonates with you or if someone you know could benefit from hearing it, please share this episode. Your trust, support, and friendship as listeners is the driving force behind these continued episodes. Remember, you're not alone. Be kind. You just don't know what others are going through or what they have experienced. Until next time, I'm your host and friend, Lisa Helton. And you've been listening to the Trusted Friend Podcast. See you next week, my friends.